Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Beep, 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 beep.
Hello and welcome to Two in the Think Tank, the show where we come up with
five
sketch ideas. I'm Andy.
And I am Alistair George William Trombley Birchall. That's my full name that I say all the time to contrast with Andy's short name that he always says. He doesn't ever mention the Matthews.
I don't. What happens is I have three names, obviously.
Right? Yeah.
First name, middle name, and a surname.
Right.
Right. But Alistair has, he really only has four names. So it's really only one more. But his surname is a double banger. It's hyphenated.
Mm.
So, you know, if I were to say my three names and he were to say his five names, then I don't think, or, you know, four/five names, I don't think it would be as funny. Like, even though you still have more names, I think the contrast between the single name and the full name is more dramatic and more comedically satisfying.
Sure. I accept that you think that I'm doing this for a comedy reason, but really, what it's about deep down is trying to get opportunities. You know,
right.
I'm more Googleable if people get my full name. You know, I don't know if I always come across as good as you on the podcast. But I'm more visible.
You are searchable.
Yeah. I'm more searchable. People are going to be searching for Andy. They're not going to come up with that much, I don't think.
Your page rank is off the charts.
Absolutely. So.
Couldn't be off the charts. The page rank is a number on a chart.
Yeah.
So whatever number it is, it's on a chart. Otherwise, you don't have a page rank, presumably, if it's off the charts.
If it's off the page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then nothing.
Yeah.
Is it worth putting like on a resume or a CV your like page rank?
My
or like,
SEO ranking.
You know what? Yeah, one of your. I'm very easy to find on the internet.
If you search my Twitter, will come up like third, after maybe two bad reviews that I got in the comedy festival. So it's not too bad. I'm pretty up there. My website's probably fifth.
Is that actually the case that your bad reviews are?
I think maybe there's always like one bad review that stays up pretty high. So that's pretty great. Good.
I think part of the Google algorithm is just keeping people down a bit, like a little bit of just like a reality check is in there as well.
Absolutely, and it's fine. I accept that some of the shows that I've done have gone poorly, and that's what keeps me humble and also unmotivated to work hard. Which is another thing that keeps me humble.
Yes. Have you noticed this trend in comedy, right? Mm-hmm. So comedians.
I'm sure I have because I
notice a lot of trends in comedy.
I'm watching a lot of trends. Yeah,
you're a big comedy trend noticer.
Yeah,
right. That people will sometimes make a joke that maybe doesn't get like a huge laugh.
Yeah,
but then they'll do a little bit of a meta reference to that joke, right? In order to sort of. Into their process and how they came up with the joke or what the comedy was in that, and then they'll say something along the lines of a bit of a glimpse behind the curtain there, right?
Yeah, I have noticed that trend.
Yeah,
yeah.
And do you think that if I were to point that out on stage, I would be able to say there's a glimpse behind the curtain there because you know, they think they've shown you behind the curtain, but really there's just a further curtain behind which they are concealing the real artifice of comedy, which is that we pretend not to care when in fact we do.
Well, I guess as soon as you pull back the curtain, that becomes the stage.
It does.
And so then there's got to be a further curtain or a wall.
Or a brick wall.
A brick wall.
Yeah. I'm ushering you through the stage door.
Possibly
into the alleyway.
Possibly just a thin bit of wood paneling that has like a sort of a landscape painted on it.
Yeah.
Maybe a castle.
A castle, maybe just a sort of like, you know, if it was a 90s sort of rock musical production, there'd just be like some chain link fence there or something like that. And like a sort of a spotlight.
Maybe a fire. Maybe like just a burning barrel.
Yeah. And people with fingerless gloves sort of gathered around it, rubbing their hands.
Could be you with your fingerless gloves.
With my fingerless gloves. By the way, if we have any cross listeners with Do Go On, right, they've got something fucking going where like they're trying to do a campaign to get the gloveless finger up. Dave Warnocky reckons he came up with it on an episode of their podcast recently. Listen back to Two in the Think Tank podcast. We came up with that in like episode 9.
Mm-hmm. Coming up with things, that's our business.
We come up with things here.
Step off, dugong.
Do Go On. What do? They repeat things that exist already in the world. They're just basically plagiarists.
Yeah.
They're just repeating history. That's what I think of historians.
Well, technically
they're plagiarists.
Yeah, but technically that's also what Do Go On are doing with this finger this gloveless finger thing. They're just repeating the thing that you said ages ago.
History.
It's just another report.
Yeah. They thought it was an original concept. Is there something about historians being plagiarists? Is there a sketch in that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's, you know, the idea of a plagiarist, like a historian being taken to court for plagiarism. I guess that could be.
Who would they be taken to court by, though?
Marvin Gaye's estate. The latest victims of Marvin Gaye's estate.
Used to be that the biggest thing clogging up our court system was people challenging toll fines for toll roads. But that's recently been overtaken by copyright claims by Marvin Gaye's estate. The estate of Marvin Gaye.
I think once they got that success over the Robin Thicke and Pharrell song...
Mm.
They were emboldened.
Sure.
They were emboldened. They saw, well, if we can get this, we could get anything.
We can go after anybody.
And so they could go after the unauthorized biography of Marvin Gaye, possibly. Well,
that's a pretty good one to go after.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're saying that as a historian, having written that, they're just basically copying his life.
Yeah. This is an exact copy. Of Marvin Gaye's life.
It's a rip-off. It's a word-for-word rip-off.
I mean, look, it's, you know, it requires at least the knowledge that Marvin Gaye's estate, but we can mention it in there, that Marvin Gaye's estate has been pursuing people for copyright infringement.
Yeah, I think that's something.
Yeah?
Yeah. I wonder if doing it over his biography
is
maybe a little too close to just something that would possibly actually happen.
Really? Like
just because when you say unauthorized biography or something like that, it makes me think, well, then there is the concept of authorization is associated with these things. Therefore, being unauthorized is somehow breaking that rule or whatever, and therefore maybe they have done something wrong.
Sure.
But... initially, when you brought it up as a throwaway, Alistair, it's so funny to me, the idea of the Marvin Gaye's estate being involved in almost anything.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, if the unauthorized thing in your mind fogs the idea. Take that word out.
Great.
The writer of Marvin Gaye's biography.
Oh, Alistair, hello.
Look at that.
Now I'm interested.
Okay, so that's, you know... my mic has gone out.
Has it?
Yeah.
Has it dropped out? No, it's still there. You're still showing up on the thing.
Oh, there was my
headphones dropped out.
It's just weird. It's the weird thing to happen.
Yeah. Anyway, a little glimpse behind the curtain there.
Yeah. In front of the brick wall. A little glimpse in front of the brick wall. What about this?
Yes.
you know, he says the little glimpse behind the curtain, right? So let's say you do your thing, you know, that's the person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then he goes like this. He goes, meep, 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 get off the road, you mongrel. Like that. There's a bloody dog on the road. Hey, what's that? There's a dog. Yeah, that's why I'm stopped. I'm not the one just stopped. It's not my fault. It's the dog on the road.
Get a bloody move on. What's going on up there?
Hey, it's a dog. I told you.
Well, I've got a whole truckload of pastizzis cooling in the back here. I've got to get down to the depot.
Well, hang on. Once the dog moves, I'll be able to move. Anyway, bit of a peek behind the brick wall.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
And what I like the most about it is that my character is apparently taking hot pastizzis to a depot.
Yeah. I suppose it's for the people of the depot to eat
who work at the depot. Sure, of course. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Unless they've got to take it to a further place.
Sure.
Then you can see his urgency. If they've got to remain hot and they've still got another step in the logistical process.
Exactly. Well, this was this is a sketch. Speaking of repeating history, this is a sketch from ages ago that you and I came up with about delivering hot cups of tea and how, like, it turns out that it's, you know, just economies of scale. It makes much more sense to have the tea made in China and then transported here. And this is, like, when I say tea made in China, I'm not talking about, obviously, like a tea bag or like a leaf tea. I'm talking about like a cup of tea, right?
Mm.
You know, modern transport logistic networks are so advanced that we can now get that cup of tea into your hand while it's still at an acceptable drinking temperature. And, you know, by doing, you know, hundreds of thousands of cups a day, we're actually able to save money. That was a good idea.
Yeah. I'm wondering whether the Martin Gay... Oh, no, it should be fine. Like, we could turn that into a sketch. I mean, I thought about writing it out as a tweet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I was like, oh, maybe it's a tweet.
Could be a tweet. Oh.
But I mean, look, we can have tweet ideas on here. Mm. All right. That's fine.
I mean, there's because what they've the estate of Marvin Gaye is doing with these legal cases is very much like it seems like they are claiming that people have ripped off sort of the vibe, right? More of songs.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's like it's a combination of like. I don't even have the musical vocabulary to describe it.
But like of actual melody and things like that, but then plus also like his essence.
Yeah, the feel of it.
Yeah.
Which if you can get in trouble for ripping off the essence of Marvin Gaye, you can do that in any aspect of life, in the way that you dress, in the way that you talk to your loved ones, in the way that you get shot by your dad.
I worry that, you know, at some point historians will be sued by sort of both the Allied forces and the Axis powers.
Yes.
For plagiarizing the Second World War.
The media presentation of the Second World War. Yeah.
So, you know, like obviously Discovery, you know, is going to go to, you know, because of all these Hitler documentaries, Hitler's estate.
You don't SBS is going to be up against the wall.
SBS. I mean, you know, when you're in trouble, I guess, and then it's just the countries that have not, that are not, that weren't involved in the war, they're the only ones that won't get a payout.
Right.
You know?
Well, but maybe then
Switzerland.
The Third World War will actually be a legal battle over copyright issues, right?
Mm.
So if we all go back in.
Of course.
Right? Say, because really, the Second World War was the Germans' idea, right? They had the idea for it in the first place.
That's true.
It was their,
you
know, if you were to assign credits for it, really, the Nazis came up with the idea for the Second World War, and then everyone else sort of was brought on by the production, you know, in the course of the production to sort of contribute various elements.
Apply some balance, maybe, but
yeah, essentially, the idea of having a world war was the Germans' idea.
Yeah, great.
And
so initially, right? Initially, what happens is all the countries that were involved sue like these gigantic media companies, which now probably own more money than some countries.
Yes,
right. So maybe Disney's involved. Maybe one of those other ones, Time Warner or something like that, yeah. if that still exists.
MGM?
MGM, I don't know, whatever, right? And then they,
Warner Brothers.
Warner Brothers, yeah. And then they succeed. And they these companies have to, they have to basically break down.
Yeah.
They're done.
Right. And they maybe they have to hand over the property. So they, like, you know, France, they get Spider-Man.
Yeah, exactly. So the, so then, and plus money and everything like that, right? And then the war really breaks out when Germany is sort of challenges the ruling, saying that they should be getting a much bigger cut.
Yes.
Like that. And then they're saying, actually, it was our idea and things like that. And so then the real war starts again through Europe and all these countries that weren't involved. And first of all, they make fun of Switzerland for not getting any money because they remain neutral.
Yeah.
And so then they – and then anyway.
But then, I presumed they'd want to put all the money into Swiss bank accounts anyway. So
yeah, maybe Liechtenstein.
Liechtenstein. Yeah.
Yep.
So I reckon there's a world a copyright battle, World War III, right?
Yeah.
Intellectual property battle. While you were talking about that downstairs, something you said made me think of the game Monopoly.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, it was about you know getting all the money from these companies, but also as I suggested, they're like their properties, the like you know. Spider-Mans and Marvels and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But in Monopoly, mm-hmm. right, I think it would be good to have a version of Monopoly, mm-hmm. which is like global corruption Monopoly or yep. something like that. So where you – it's the rules of Monopoly,
yep.
but then also you can be corrupt. So it's possible to like pay off the bank so that even the rules of the game don't particularly apply to you.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Maybe like – You're playing Monopoly, and then there's some sort of dark Monopoly element that can be overlaid over the top of a traditional game of Monopoly.
Yeah, but is there also sort of like a constitution that protects you and has processes in place that allow you to, you know, in the right circumstances, let's say in the event of like a 45 number 45 president, you know. And possible, you know, foreign interference in an election. Can you instigate...
Still, like when they're trying to get around the rules of Monopoly, can you then appeal to a higher authority?
Can you instigate an inquiry into that which leads you to the corruption of the global corruption problem?
You absolutely can. But then I think that even beyond that, it's possible through manipulation of the media and the Supreme Court to... affect even the processes and the implementation of the Constitution. So if you have enough money, you're able to transcend that as well. And then you're left with only, I guess, the laws of the physical laws of the universe as the only thing that can constrain you. And, of course, God's law.
Right. And no amount of money can protect you from those?
If you've got enough money, I think even God will probably be like...
I mean, there's got to be at least one billionaire who has just a priest on side, like a... On the payroll, who they can use to maybe
and that's
sort
all
of,
you need. You just need one priest, and then he can just like bless you, like whenever.
Yeah, I mean, maybe like one high ranking religious figure from each religion just in case.
Right.
You know, a high priestess of of Gaia or something like that. You know,
I think if we found out that the Pope had been bought off somehow.
Yeah,
that'd be quite interesting.
Great. Yeah, he was someone who was paying for his ruby slippers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ruby slippers?
Oh, no, it's the Dalai Lama?
He has ruby slippers?
Like, doesn't he have, like... I thought they refer to him as, like, the monk with the, like, Louis Vuitton shoes or something like that.
Yeah, right.
You know, where he does have some...
He's doing okay.
Yeah, I think he's doing okay. He's on these speaking tours all the time.
Sure.
I mean... I think if that's separate from look, I've put the Marvin Gaye as a half sketch.
Sure.
So that because it's what it really was leading into was the real sketch,
which is the copyright.
The copyright battle of World War III.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was this. Wait, okay. So this was.
I've gone totally blank. Oh, it's Monopoly, but with a higher with corrupt. It's corrupt Monopoly. Oh,
yeah.
basically. Yeah. I think global corruption monopoly.
I think we could do that as just an ad.
I think, what about, like, it's a game of Monopoly where you're playing the game and then, like, there's a knock at the door and someone dressed all in black you've never seen before comes and sits down at the Monopoly table and starts playing the game as well, and you don't understand their motivations, right? They have all this money and you don't know where it's come from, and they begin to affect the course of the game, and they somehow represent the forces of dark money and corruption.
Sure. But then also, like, that the game gets taken away from the actual board, where, like, you know, you have drinks over here and things like that, and
It busts out. That's great. It busts out of actually the board game.
Yeah.
And becomes...
It's closer to Jumanji. Yeah. It's the Jumanji of Monopoly. This person... Yeah, like just a couple of people, you know, they don't have to be foreign, but they're probably going to be foreign to you in some way, at least in their inability to know who they are personally.
Yeah, yeah.
Or their history.
But also you don't know their values. You don't even know the fundamental, like, if they're bound by the fundamental sort of constraints of humanity.
And the board itself comes with its own underbelly, which is a place under where you can sort of pass money around through sort of...
secret channels.
Yeah, secret channels.
And, yeah.
There's communication channels as well that are encrypted.
I think this would be a good little ad, done good to do as a little ad.
Yeah, for a new version of the Monopoly board.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well.
Oh, great.
Well, I didn't mention it earlier.
No, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, that's good. It's probably where I got the idea.
No, it was probably a voice in your head rather than a voice coming into your ear.
What's the difference, Alistair?
Look, this is 3 million views minimum.
Absolutely.
If only we had the motivation to go ahead and, you know,
make it.
Or not just the motivation, also a little bit of time.
It's so richly satirical.
It's darkly, rich, isn't it?
Dark, rich satirical. It's like a lint bar. It's like an 80% lint bar of satire.
It's almost too rich.
Yeah.
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 Is there, I think we have done stuff with billionaires trying to break the laws of physics or the God's laws or whatever like that. But I think the idea of a troop of high-ranking religious figures who are just on the payroll of a billionaire and just seeing them sit in a room, I don't know what, like, I don't know how we're using this sketch idea.
I don't know, but I like picturing it in a kind of a club, like a real, like a sinful kind of a club. I like that these people are so, they've been so corrupted by money that they sit around in their religious garb in like a darkly lit strip club kind of a place while just awful things are happening all around them. But after each awful transaction, maybe it's at a casino and it's part of the service that on the way out you can be blessed by... you know, one of the highest ranking religious officials in any religion. Like, you pick up your cloak, your coat. Maybe we call it a cloak room.
Yeah.
But really, it's a coat room.
Well, it depends what era you're in.
That's true.
Yeah.
Transylvania, probably cloaks.
Yeah, or cape.
Yeah.
Cape room. I mean, we call it a cloak room, but really, it's really a cape room.
It's... Well, some of these are more cowls. A hooded cowl. Are you unhappy?
I don't know. No. I just don't know what a cowl is. So I think it's like
a cape, but with like a big collar.
Oh, cool. Of course. Yeah, they're definitely. Oh, that's really sort of like Doctor Strange would wear.
Yeah.
He wears a cowl.
Yeah, it could be. It's a hard word to say, though.
Cowl.
Cowl.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's like you've mispronounced coal. Yeah.
Yeah, or cow.
Yeah, cow. Yeah.
Or petunias.
Petunias.
Yeah, really mispronounced it.
That, like, doesn't sound... Yeah.
Mispronounced the fuck out of it.
Absolutely. My son's turned boy into a two-syllable word. Did I tell you that? Bo-woy.
Bo-woy.
He says bo-woy. Oh, I'm a good bo-woy.
That's nice. There's a roundness to that, isn't there?
It like it almost feels like that's how it should be said.
Boy. I can't do it.
I know. It takes a while to get your mouth. Think of it being spelled B-O-W-O-Y.
Bowoy.
I mean, you know how it should be. Okay. B-O-W-W-O-Y.
Bowoy.
Yeah. Bowoy.
Yeah, I think I got it.
Yeah.
I was trying, Alistair, but my brain wasn't letting me.
Bowoy. Like you didn't know what the end point was?
We both agreed it was hard, and then you gave me a little thing. And I had one shot at you gave me one chance, and then you treated me like a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Just because I can't pronounce words that your son's made up.
Yeah. It was unfair, wasn't it, Andy?
Yeah. It felt like a real betrayal. I thought this was a safe, you know, spot check.
Andy, it's a space closet. It's a safe closet, not a space closet, sorry. It's a safe closet that we're in. I found it funny because the difficult part was the second half of the word. Not the first half. Bo was the part that we'd all nailed already.
Which that's is already why, in the word.
Yeah.
But what do you think about like in a casino or something like that?
So they're blessing you on your way out.
Mm.
Why? Yeah,
because you've done awful things in there. You know, you've lusted.
But you could use a blessing on the way in, right? Because you're about to go gambling.
Yeah, but that's true. But that doesn't feel like it's in the interests of the casino.
I mean, I guess the idea like that they do bless the casino because I think when you're playing with such high. Big amounts of money, even a tiny percentage change in influence is a giant amount of money, right? So, even if like it's a quarter percent effect that it might have, that you're talking about, you know, $250, $500 million or something like that, you know? So even if you know, I don't know if a casino can experience the placebo effect. But I wonder, I mean, this would be an interesting study, if organizations can experience the placebo effects, not just the mind.
Well, I wonder if the existence of God could be a quantum phenomenon, right? Mm. Whereby if we can work out what percentage chance there is of the likelihood of the existence of God, could it be said that he exists that amount, right?
Yeah.
So therefore, that would be the amount at which a prayer or a blessing from a suitably high official could affect the outcome of a gambling event.
Mm. And so you multiply that by the number of potential gods, then it makes sense to have all of those religious figures involved.
Is this like a version of the movie Rain Man, where instead of his one brother who's really good at counting cards, he bumps into... I don't know, like a down on his luck cardinal, and they go casino to casino with the cardinal sort of blessing him or granting, you know, I don't want to say wishes, but whatever they have.
Yeah, and then eventually they kick him out because they're like, you're not allowed to have a high ranking.
You can't have anyone above an archdeacon.
Yeah, just with you. He's like. Just pretend. You just dress him up in a suit and you pretend like he's just a regular guy. Yeah. Did you already say this?
No, I didn't, but that's great.
But like, and you get him to like bless hands sort of real subtly, and there's like security people sort of keeping an
eye
on
him. Look at this here. He's making the sign of the cross.
That water that he's drinking from, I think that might be holy.
I think that's really
Do you think these are kind of two ideas in one, or is it...
I can't even remember the first idea. Oh, the team
casinos
of people.
I mean, maybe this is how...
They try and combat it?
Or this is how they come up with the idea.
Yeah.
Some guy comes in and he's like... They think it's a kind of classic card counting thing. Mm. But then they find the guy's priest badge or whatever, you know, he's got on him. They search him and he's just got rosaries on him and a cross and a...
I think he's priest badge.
It's priest badge. I mean, why don't more jobs have badges? Why only cops?
A lanyard, you know?
Yeah, a priest lanyard.
Yeah, it's just an organization like anything else. There'd exactly. be a lanyard, there'd be a couple of rosary beads on the lanyard, sure. But then there's a little card that tells you sort of what your security clearance is, what level of
exactly.
heaven you're able to get into, level of bliss you're able to attain. I don't really know much about the Catholic religion.
And while you're at it, you can probably have these guys blessing people on the way out. Mm. Just as a, you know, maybe it's just a $5 chip kind of thing. But you know, like they're just in there. They're all waiting in their version of like a, you know, like a confession room. But you basically just go in there. They give you a bit of this.
Al's doing various sort of religious seeming gestures. Yeah. Yeah, you know, like a shaman there, and
you know, one of you know, and
a druid,
yeah, some kind of Amazonian shaman,
yeah,
maybe from like the Amazons, like the
oh,
yes,
know,
big legs, you know, just I just
are we talking about a thigh? Are we talking about yeah, like a I mean, strong thigh,
like
thigh?
I mean, yeah,
like an Amazonian thigh,
yeah, I just picture like an ice skater's thigh,
yeah.
Do you think the ice skaters have the biggest thigh?
I mean, the weightlifters, they have got some big thighs.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess,
And the hammer toss as well.
That's hammer toss, because you don't think of it being in the, you know, a thigh kind of
No, but they do
sport.
That spin, and there's lot involved in that.
I think what seems like is the hardest part of the spin, I watched a short thing on it, is the part where you got to do the spin, but in order to do the launch, you kind of have to... stop. I don't know, maybe this is more discus, but you kind of have to like use all your force to stop yourself at the end there. I think maybe to direct it and to.
But also because you can't cross the line, I think there's like a foul line there or something.
Yeah. And maybe that gets a little bit more force in the flick or something.
Force in the flick. Would you want to put all of that into the
disc?
Into the disc.
Us.
Yes. Discuss.
I never thought. Is it just spelled discuss but minus one S?
Yes, correct.
Hmm.
I wonder if, and I don't. We don't have to pursue this because we've talked about this a lot already. But if it would be funnier if the person that he was taking around to the casinos with him was the Messiah,
you know,
was actually.
Well, at the moment, I've just kind of written it down as the casino has a bunch of people on.
Mm.
But like Rain Man Messiah, should I just write down Rain Man Messiah?
You could do that. Yeah, I think like it's fun to do the start of a movie where you think it's going to be a story about the Messiah coming back, enlightening people, struggling, maybe sacrificing themselves or whatever. Mm. But like at a really early point in the movie, they just fall in with the wrong guy. Mm.
Yeah.
And then they're in with this casino card shark who takes them around various places and misuses their...
Mm.
Almost like the Rush Hour movies, right, where Chris Tucker, it feels like, exploits Jackie Chan's martial arts ability. But what if instead of being good at martial arts, he was just able to, you know, rend the fabric of space and time to God's will?
Yeah, or at least, you know, just even... slightly tilt it, bend it, you know, slightly. I guess it could be it's a film or a sketch that's about ingrained, like underprivilege, whatever that is called. You know, disadvantage, underprivilege, disadvantage, and so it's a, you know, through various kind of like born with like. There's just flashbacks straight away. Like this kid has visions from the time it's born that suggests that it's had a previous life and it was Jesus.
Yeah.
Right. And then, but it's growing up in a very poor family, and it kind of gets involved in petty crime.
Yes.
But then slowly, kind of just, you know, not miraculous powers that emerge, but just kind of like powers to be able to, you know. Almost like luck and being able to sort of slightly bend things to their will.
Yeah.
Which means that the gangs just kind of always bring them, you know, when they're doing stuff because things always work out when he's there. And then it turns into this kind of thing that he does where he just basically goes to the gambling things. And
where do we want this story to go? Do we want there to be redemption in the end? Do we want this person to sort of find the path of the light? Or do they become some sort of antichrist? Or is that it? We don't do anything else with it. And it's done.
I think there's a midpoint where they can be they can be this kind of light side creature within creature within the dark.
Yeah.
Because I think there's no way out for it.
Him. Yeah.
Yep. It. I keep referring to Jesus as an it.
Or a creature.
Or a creature. But because that's how, you know, ingrained the disadvantage is.
Mm.
Because at some point, even with the card, you know, the casino stuff, they just figure something's up.
Sure.
And they ban them. They can't get out. They can't make enough money, even though, like, or they just eventually do just get caught. And then he becomes a Jesus of the prison system.
Might I tell you, Alistair, that this sounds almost like some kind of modern day parable.
Do you think it's a parable?
It could be a parable.
Well, there you go. Maybe Jesus could tell it when he comes back.
Wait, yeah.
I mean, obviously we'll have to write it and create it.
Oh, it'd be so good, though. That'd be a real coup to get him on board.
Mm.
Mm. Read by Jesus. The Bible, right, an audio book, but read by Jesus. How good's that?
And if the actual Jesus in this thing is the race of the actual Jesus, that would also then give it kind of racial undertones of, you know, why minorities can't break through some of these things.
Some certain cycles of, disadvantage.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you what, Alistair, that is dark and rich.
I mean,
that's a 90% lint cocoa bar.
If you set it in one of these like ghettos in France.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's not really any good to us in the West here. The West, France is in the West, but in the, you know, but like, you know, it kind of has one of those things where it's like, oh, he's probably born in like a Muslim family or something like that, because it's from, you know, the whatever region. I don't know. Is it, you know, Jerusalem? Is that where... Is Jerusalem Muslim now, or is it Jewish?
I don't know.
Nazareth. Nazareth is what I'm talking about. Nazareth. Sorry.
I don't know.
Anyway, because whatever, ancestors, probably still bloodline. Same bloodline.
Yeah, yep.
Anyway.
Yep. And he's still got the gift. He's got the knack. Messiahing. It's more of a knack.
Yeah, well, it's just ingrained. But what if he does, you know, even if he does learn the stuff, who's the fuck's going to listen to him? Even himself. Why would he believe in himself?
Yeah. No, Alistair, you're absolutely right.
There's two hemispheres of the brain. Which one is Jesus in?
We don't understand, like, even the level of advantage that we have just as a default, just walking around, you know? Because you might think you're a self-made person, but that's not the case at all.
No.
You are only self-made in the context of the society that has already given you everything.
Mm-hmm. Survival of the fittest, you know?
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Within the environment that it is raised in or whatever. So I was listening to this podcast and we were talking about what was a gold mine for psychological research, where they were the split hemisphere people. Like,
oh, yeah.
So I think maybe it was either the first time they had to like split somebody's hemispheres because – or he had –
Is it an epilepsy thing?
I think because of an epilepsy thing or something like
so
that.
Maybe the 1960s. Two halves of the brain, the right and the left, and they have connections between them. But they started doing some surgeries where, because of people with severe epilepsy, they found that if they split those connections, you could cure the epilepsy.
Yeah, and what they were finding was that there's essentially like two brains in there's a brain in each hemisphere.
Yeah,
and there would be things where, like, let's say Because I think if you, you know, the left brain is involved with the right eye, and the left hemisphere is involved with the right eye, and the right hemisphere is involved with the left eye, and then they would show things to each eye, and let's say, so I think the left brain has the narrator, like the person who's capable in your brain of vocalizing things and that rationalizes and tells you what's going on, right? And whereas the right side doesn't have that. And so when they would show something to that side of the brain and then ask this person, well, what did you see? He would say like, oh, yeah, I saw a trumpet.
Yeah.
Right? But if they showed the same thing to the left side of the brain, he wouldn't know what was seen.
Yes.
But if you gave him a pen and put it in his left hand or whatever, he would be able to draw it.
It's so crazy and it's the coolest thing I've ever heard.
And then if they say, why did you draw that? His storytelling brain would rationalize it in such a way to say, oh, it's because I heard music recently,
yeah,
or whatever, and he was like, oh, that's why I did that. But that hadn't happened. That was just
he hadn't heard music recently. He had never heard music. That's not true.
No.
And then they would prove that to him.
Yeah.
And then say, you lied. You're a fucking liar. And they'd kick him out onto the street. And then he just
would say, I was joking.
Yeah. Alistair. That's something I meant to bring up with you.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a deep dive.
Yeah.
Right? About like 6-7 years ago in our friendship, like I'm talking early on, right? We were going to get the train.
Okay.
Right? And I don't know if you remember this. There was a train station. We were at the train station.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the there was no one else on the train station.
Yeah.
Right? And we were having a conversation to the effect of, has the train just arrived, just left, or is it still on its way, right? Have we missed the train? And I said, oh, I reckon it's still on its way. And you said, well, then why is there no one on the state platform or something like that? And then I said something along the lines of, I was joking. And you said, I don't think you were joking. Why would you make a joke about that? That's not a joke. Even if you were joking, that's not a joke. I think you're just wrong and you're saying you were joking because you don't want to look wrong. It was like this really interesting moment where to this day, I still don't know if I actually thought I was joking, but I have to say I'm on your side. Like you really called, like it was early on, we didn't know each other that well, and you really called me out on it in that moment. And it was quite a formative thing of like, oh, wow, okay, I'm not entirely safe with this person.
I don't remember this, but I could imagine that it would stick in my mind that I'm like, it seems weird that you would make a joke about that.
Yeah. How is that? I think one of you says, how is that a joke?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess it just didn't feel like it would have had the intent to make somebody laugh.
Yeah, exactly. And I think maybe that is the moment at which I realized either A, I can't lie to Alistair as much, or B, I've got to work on my jokes. I don't know.
I think if I was to say that I have a life purpose is to just make people doubt their own certainty.
Sure.
Yeah, that would be my whole life purpose.
Yeah, well, you've definitely done that.
Great. As long as you're no longer as stable on your feet as you used to be and as cocksure and capable of, you know, tackling regular situations.
Exactly.
With just comfort, then
I have a sort of a veneer of doubt between even my heart and my mind.
Yeah.
And that's good. You know, I've internalized it.
Well, I'm glad and I'm...
Anyway, I just brought that up because it reoccurred to me yesterday, and then you said that thing about
rationalizing.
Yeah, saying it's a joke, but actually it's a lie.
Yeah.
And I realized you haven't changed.
It's also something my toddler son does a lot when if he says something wrong and you go, "Why did you say that?" and he goes, "I was joking."
Are you serious?
Yeah. But where I was heading with the split
brain.
The split brain thing. One other little story from it was just that they had a little thing where apparently one guy's another person with the split hemisphere thing, he would be doing maths with one hand and his other hand would be trying to stop it.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Like, and then the other hand was like, stop doing maths.
Like trying to grab his hand to stop it. So but I wonder which one he's doing the maths with. Presumably the right side must be doing the maths.
Yeah, with the right side, and then the narrator part that's like watching and going, hey, stop doing that.
But then why, how could you possibly communicate to either side of the brain without the other side realizing the thought, don't do maths?
Yeah.
Like what kind of, show an image of a trumpet?
Well, what was crazy with the image of the trumpet thing is that that was the way that the two hemispheres were communicating on the page.
Mm. So maybe externally.
Externally. Like
it's like you can't. You've got two cells next to each other, like people in cells.
Yeah.
And they can't talk to each other directly, so they've got to send a message via a rat.
Yeah, or through they've got torches and they can just do hand puppets.
Yes.
On the wall up ahead, like that. They're just two guys communicating via.
It's something about a swan.
Wait, I think it's a yappy dog of some sort.
A bunny rabbit.
It's
a baby hand reaching an adult hand.
Oh, it's a kind of.
Oh, that's beautiful. It's really making me. Well, it was very. I'm not sure about the escape plan, but I was deeply emotionally affected.
Look, I feel like there's a short film in that. Yeah. I don't know where it went.
Yeah. What is it? Because there has to be a something that this challenge of the shadow puppetry is in the context of like are they, if they are planning an escape or something. But then they've also got to be able to reveal. I think what it has to be right is that we see people struggling with this communication form right, and then in a big reveal at the end. We revealed that the escape plan actually did in some way involve a giant swan and a parrot or something, because that was the only thing that they could actually communicate.
Yeah.
But they were able to use that in order to formulate an escape.
So it's two people in a Guantanamo Bay style place where they're in a kind of padded room, but they're being flooded with sensory stuff as a kind of form of torture.
Oh my God.
So there's loud noise, like loud music playing, but there's also just really bright lights on them to try to stop them from being able to sleep and things like that, right? But then, and so there's people with two sort of quite sealed, solitary confinement things, but with a little window. A glass window that looks out into the hallway, but because there's a big bright light behind them, they can sort of communicate using those, where the light reaches the wall.
It could also be people just in total darkness, but then there's like a tiny little hole in the wall where, like at a certain time of day, the sun shines through and there and casts a beam onto the opposite wall.
It's less cruel, but then why can't they just speak?
Because they're not because of the guards, will hear them.
Oh yeah. How's this a sketch though? So it actually is like they're planning an escape. Okay.
Maybe we don't even realize they're planning an escape, right? We just see them doing this shadow puppetry business, and like it's just the classic shadow puppetry stuff. And one guy's watching, other guy's doing it, and then at a different time of day when the sun moves around, the other one's able to do stuff as well. And it plays out almost like a sort of a beautiful French, sort of film. It's black and white. There's string music. Okay, there swells the heart. There's a bird flutters, and then
we see. Bird.
At the end, right? There's a parade that goes past, like a float, or something. There's some big parade, and there's a big inflatable swan up in the sky, right? And then somehow they grab the ropes from the swan and they are lifted to safety, and we realize.
The parade's just going by the prison? It's an open, and it's got an open top.
It's an open top prison.
Well, look, I won't imagine that it's that simple, but
fucking hell. But I think you know, something along those lines.
Yeah, obviously along those lines. Yeah. It's like a Macy's Day Parade
Past the prison.
Past the prison.
For some reason, the route of the parade has to be diverted. Maybe they've got people on the outside. That's right. Some other element of what they were doing in the shadow puppetry is communicating the idea of this thing that has to be...
Great.
I don't know why they're communicating to each other. They really need to be communicating to someone outside the prison.
Yeah, but maybe they can cause something to happen using, like, a rabbit.
Great.
You know, using a rabbit, they can divert a parade.
Yeah, they get a rabbit.
They've been breeding rabbits or something like that, and there's a rabbit infestation that they let out. I think if it's in a, like, a youth detention thing, that's kind of more of a thing that is kind of, like, more inner city.
Urban.
Yeah, kind of urban
it's
youth detention.
It's more likely to be close to a Macy's Day Parade.
That's right.
Is it the Macy's Day Parade? There can't be a Macy's Day.
Yeah, no, the Macy's something day parade.
Christmas?
Christmas Day? No, it's not Christmas Day. It's like Thanksgiving, I think. Macy's Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving Day Parade? Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
This is us from our secondhand cultural.
Maybe instead of a swan, it's a turkey, because that makes more sense for Thanksgiving.
Right.
Yeah. obviously, this is going to have to be set in America, because nobody's celebrating Thanksgiving here.
Mm.
We don't give thanks. Puppetry escape plan.
I'm going to come up with a character who calls it Spanksgiving Day Parade. Spanksgiving.
Right. And then
he's one of those people who says, spank you very much.
Yeah. Like sort of off of what Jim Carrey used to say as Ace Ventura.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
That's his only character trait.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. Is he sort of, does he work in marketing to promote Spanx?
See, this almost makes too much sense now.
Yeah, oh, you're right. I feel bad. Andy, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and a half sketch ideas.
Sure.
So I think that means that we got to get to
word of the day.
Word of the day.
We have 3 words from a listener who supports us on Patreon. Thank you so much to everyone who supports us on Patreon. Thank you to everyone who's been chipping in at any level on there. It's
any
beautiful
level.
What you do.
Yeah, that's right. It's really paying for George.
George, and, who does the production.
And it's allowing us to put a little something for one day when we're both desperate as it accumulates. One day, maybe the money will grow to a point where we can have, we can do something with it.
Yeah, yeah, we can make something,
maybe.
Or we could, if we're really in trouble, just survive a little bit longer, which is a prerequisite for us ever making something in the future.
That's right. Yeah, and so today's 3 words come from Jared Grubbs. Hello, Jared.
Hello, Grubbsy.
Hello, Grubby. Grubby Grubbs. Jared. Jazza, Jizza Grubbs, Jizza Grubbsy. His 3 words are baby,
yes,
talk, curse.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do
all those words start with a P? No. Baby, talk, curse.
Well, I mean, it is. Almost immediately a sketch, right?
Yeah.
In the idea of like, I've smacked my lips a fair bit.
Yeah. Like you're eating cantaloupe.
This is how delicious this sketch
like
concept
you were
is.
Kramer eating cantaloupe in Seinfeld.
Mwah, mwah. This is a sort of a combination of a sort of a classic fairy tale, a classic Sleeping Beauty, which comes to the christening, right, is offended by the king and curses the baby, right? But instead of like cursing the baby to fall asleep and only be reawoken by a kiss from a stranger, basically some kind of sexual assault, right? It is a they curse the baby to basically have some kind of like look who's talking now John Travolta movie type syndrome. Like something like that. So
I was picturing like a you know, like somebody in an office that you work with who kind of always talks like this. Oh, I'm just having a good time, like that. And then kind of, so still your idea.
Thank God.
But it's like a guy who's, you know, just for some reason he's just kind of, this has always irritated him. He's flipping out. He goes, why do you always talk like that? Just talk like an adult. And then you see her flashback and it goes back to her as a baby and a witch kind of putting a thing on her. And she was talking as a baby very early on, but she never stopped talking like that.
Is it more compelling, though, to have it that that guy who is angry about when people talk to babies like babies is himself then cursed to talk like a baby? You know, and it's a modern day witch, you know, it's an office environment, as you say. And then it's this guy, it's to bring it back to Jim Carrey. It's basically liar, liar. But instead of telling the truth, he has to talk like a baby. Jim Carrey's son, it's his birthday. His dad hasn't shown up because he tells lies all the time. But when he makes that wish on the birthday cake, for some reason, instead of saying, I wish my dad could only tell the truth just for one day, he says, I wish my dad talked like a baby. Talked like a person talking to a baby.
Look, I think that's close. I think that's close.
It's a deliberately obnoxious idea, Alistair. I'm sorry.
No, but I something. What about like you see the story of how she got cursed, and maybe it's got to do with her yelling at somebody for talking like a baby, and she can't pass on the curse until somebody yells at her for talking like a baby. And it's a moral of the story about being tolerant towards people, even if they talk like a baby and they're an adult.
Yeah.
But maybe she did it as a mean teenager.
I think that's really good. And it's got an element of like a sort of the movie The Ring kind of a thing with like that video, you got to pass it on, or It Follows, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, but with baby voice, baby talk voice.
Now, did we come up with a sketch idea there? I mean, we came up with, like that's baby talk.
We can't just curse. Write down the three words that he's given.
Contagion story. But that's what I'm saying. Like, did we come up with a sketch idea, or did we just say the three words and then just describe it in sketch form?
No, that's what this is, right? Yeah. We place these things into a sketch form. But I feel like I had just... Quickly, I feel like I had some germ of another little thing in there, which is baby talk, like that voice, talking to babies. Oh, but the possibility of talking about babies. Like, I feel like as a guy who now has two young kids, that conversations about babies have kind of taken over my life.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it is sort of the default of like what people want to talk to me about when I see them.
Yeah.
But also what I feel comfortable talking about as well when I see people, because it's pretty much all that's happening in my life.
You're very knowledgeable about it right now.
I'm deeply knowledgeable.
You're actually one of the most knowledgeable people to inquire about your babies.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I'm on the inner... They've let me into their inner circle.
That's really nice, yeah.
Is it possible that there could be something in that, like that we discover that phenomenon of just talking about babies is some kind of it's not a natural thing actually. It is a curse, or it is a something that can be cured, or something like that. Or is it possible for somebody to get that when they don't even have babies? I don't know, I'm sort of flailing here.
But I don't know, just the idea that like they've actually found that the reason why parents always talk about their kids is because of there's these witches that go from hospital to hospital cursing the parents. Like they dress up as a nurse.
Yeah.
Right? They put on a fake nose over their big crooked warty nose.
Oh no.
And that just looks like a dainty little nurse nose.
Yeah. Well, actually, if you were a that'd be a great those clown doctors, you know.
Of course.
We let them in because laughter is the best medicine. They entertain their kids. But what we don't realize is that we've given a really sweet cover for any hook-nosed witches.
Yeah, that's
right.
Who
want to cover up their evil witch nose to get into the hospital.
Yeah, so you know how like those The only problem is that those clown doctors don't tend to go and visit women recovering from like a C-section scar or something.
In that case, laughter is very much not the best medicine.
You go, ow, 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 my C-section scar.
Okay, that's a sketch. Clown doctors in the maternity ward, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what they have to do to keep them out, or like having to have the conversation with the clown doctor that they're no longer welcome in the maternity ward. Like, because you're either like sending people into labor prematurely, you're damaging after they've had that surgery. I mean, all really comfortable conversation. It's just stuff for women to watch that sketch, I'd imagine.
Then it turns out, maybe we can reveal that it's actually a witch.
It was a witch.
It was a witch the whole time, putting the baby talk curse on them. It's just a sketch with a third act that surprises.
Yes. And this episode isn't brought to you by Harry's Razors, but I'd just like to interrupt the podcast quickly to say I shaved really recently, got rid of my beard and shaved with Harry's Razors, and it was great.
Oh, my God.
So this is just a freebie for those guys.
Wow. That's great. And your face looks great.
Thank you.
Looks like you did it a few days ago.
Yeah, it was about four or five days ago.
Or the Harry's Razor has made you so masculine.
Yes.
That if you shave this morning, hours before seeing me, and you're already like a half centimeter in.
That's not a half a centimeter.
It isn't?
No way.
No?
Yeah, you're crazy. No. Anyway.
That's at least three mil.
Just a little bit of stub.
That's at least 3 mil.
I got a semi stub.
Do you want me to run us through the sketch ideas?
Yeah.
This is our first half sketch, the Marvin Gaye estate are taking a historian to court for plagiarizing Marvin Gaye's life in the biography that they wrote of Marvin Gaye. Mm. Then we also have, in a similar vein, which is the full sketch idea, this is all the countries that were involved in the Second World War, taking all the productions and books of Second World War.
Media depictions
of the Second World War, taking them to court for plagiarizing their war.
Yes.
Winning.
Yes.
But then they all go to battle with each other for the shares of the winning that they're entitled to. Because Germany claims that this was all their idea,
but it's also it's illegal. It's an entirely legal court-based war.
Absolutely, but it's huge.
Yeah, and millions of people die.
Yeah, at least lawyers.
Lawyers. Yeah. They've worked so hard. They're just falling.
Yeah. Then the next is an ad for Global Corruption Monopoly. It's a new version of the Monopoly board game that involves a dark money section, a person that comes in and plays that you don't know who they are and you don't know their intentions, and they seem to quickly take control of huge portions of the board, but they're willing to wheel and deal in the underside of this board, which comes with it where...
And they turn families against each other.
Mm, yeah. They get them to join new families, some of them crime families.
Yeah.
Some of them just regular families.
Sure.
They adopt them. That'll be involved in this new Monopoly.
Is that a reference to that Russian adoption law that was one of the
things at the meeting at the Trump Tower
they
were talking about? But do you know why they were talking about that? I think that was because of that what's the name of that law that is in America that's named after a billionaire or a journalist that was killed?
Oh, yeah.
It's the law that doesn't allow money by certain oligarchs to be brought into America. And they think that that's what Putin was trying to do with the law.
Get to.
I think that's why he banned American adoption of Russian babies, was because of that law. Naginsky, there's something law.
But the Russians have the best babies.
The Russians have the best babies, and that's the problem. But do you need a Russian agent growing in your own house? That's the question. The answer is, I don't know.
Next week's episode.
But also, I think they say that if we know, if we found out about that meeting and Putin is involved, it's probably because he intended people
to
us to find out, because he's like, if we were going to have a meeting that he didn't want us to find out we wouldn't. And so he like he wanted there to be a trail leading to Russia from the Trump campaign so that there was more turmoil.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
I mean, if you're
pretty clever, if you're playing chess a couple of steps ahead.
Yeah, I mean, if you're involved in destabilizing the West, nothing destabilizes it more than getting a fucked up leader.
Mm.
And then also having his leadership cause into question so that people can't focus entirely on what's going on. Anyway. Mm.
Nothing destabilizes the West like letting the West know that you've been destabilizing the West.
Absolutely.
We hate to think that people might have been destabilizing us.
Mm. Then there's, of course, the Rain Man Messiah. And this is obviously the movie about the return of the Lord, but in an underprivileged family or disadvantaged family. And he gets involved in petty crime. He gets involved in bigger crimes, but then he gets caught and he's involved in, I don't know, we don't...
He can turn water into wine, why not water into meth?
Yeah, we'll see, exactly. You know, maybe quartz into meth?
Yeah. Ice? Yeah. Into ice?
Ice into ice? Well, that's possible.
Yeah.
I guess that's also water, isn't it?
Mm.
Very good.
Thanks.
What kind of wine do you think it is? Like, yeah, I guess we've probably talked about this. But
I feel like we've probably talked about it.
They don't mention what varietal.
It was a sparkling white wine from the Barossa region.
Yeah. Was it like a Pinot Noir? Or no, that's
I feel like back then all wine was just like slop. It would have been so bad.
Back in those days?
Yeah, because there was no hygiene. Everything was just brewed in an open amphora.
Yeah.
Disgusting.
I think there would have been a few twigs in there or whatever.
Yeah, I'm sure there'd be twigs, but is that good?
No.
Oh.
No, it's not. But I'm just saying, like, you just learn to deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
In order to get drunk. Get crunk!
What?
Then we got the Prison Shadow Puppetry Escape Plan.
Yeah. That's
two guys, yeah.
This is quite beautiful.
Yeah, I think that's nice.
Mm, black and white.
We got the Baby Talk Curse Contagion story, how it passes from one to another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get to see a story of this office lady who's, you get a scene of her getting yelled at by this other office guy, and then you get a flashback to her in high school bullying. She's one of the popular kids. She's bullying this other girl who talks like a baby.
Mm.
And then she starts talking like a baby.
Mm.
And then this guy at the end of the thing, he starts talking like a baby.
And his life is in tatters.
Well.
Because he had a job, and his job was not talking like a baby.
Yeah. And he only had one thing to do. That's why he felt so strongly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, if you're given, you know, I assume that, you know, he occasionally has to talk in front of people.
Mm.
Oh, then the light bulbs use more energy than these LEDs here.
Maybe
that our competitors' cells.
Is this a different idea? Mm-hmm. But that fucking standing desks. By the way, I came up with another version of the standing desk.
Yeah, right? Swimming desk.
It's the diving desk.
Yeah.
Right? It's close to swimming desk. It's the diving desk where you're constantly like at a 45 degree angle down towards your keyboard.
Mm.
And that attitude of diving into something allows you to be much more creative and motivated in your work.
Tricks
the brain
into thinking there's forward momentum. Yeah. So you're just like...
You're going places.
Yeah. That's good. A diving desk.
But an office in which it's been discovered, or somebody has proposed the idea that if everybody talks like a baby, then it's really good for like combating sort of privilege and established divisions and stuff within the office. You know, it makes the boss seem much more approachable if the boss is always talking like a baby.
Yeah, it's sort of a neutral voice.
Mm, it's the new open office.
Yeah.
It's the baby voice office. And, you know, men, women, people of all cultures and accents, if everybody's doing a baby voice, then nobody is able to assert their authority in a toxic way.
That's right. We take it back to where everyone is an equal.
Yes.
There's no such thing as a high-class baby.
Babies are all equal.
There's no such thing as a low-class baby. Yeah. Every baby is just equal like that, you know?
And then so if we all talk like this, then...
Jonathan, can you come to the meeting in... I don't know what I'm doing. That sounds like some weird accent.
Like the nanny? You just doing...
Mr. Sheffield.
Yeah. That's a bit of a baby voice.
Then we got the clown doctors in the maternity ward.
Mm. Ow, my C-section scar.
Mm.
Like that. And then... obviously, we have the diving desk, and then we have the baby voice office.
Mm.
That's today's episode. I think there's a few ideas on there today.
There's
one,
a bunch
two,
of
three,
episodes.
Four, five, six, yeah, seven, eight, nine, and a half.
Bonus little half, little ideas at the end there.
Yeah, a couple of bonies.
Mm. And maybe with the diving desk, you always have like a fan on your desk as well, pointing up, so the air is like rushing past.
Could
you.
It be? Maybe it could be done in one of those sort of training. Fan things for skydiving.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. So it's just a... It's like
you're
a floating...
You're in free fall.
You're in free fall at all times. It's just... Whoa!
And that the wind rushing past your ears, like you there'd be no distractions.
Absolutely, yeah. It's like a white noise machine at all time. Mm. Your mouth would get dry. And eyes. But you could wear goggles.
You can fall your way to the top.
That's right.
Andy. Plummet to the summit, baby. All right.
Which you can do from a plane.
Yeah. Would ants like any of these sketch ideas?
Let's see.
Yeah, I feel like maybe they wouldn't, you know?
Oh, I don't think they'd like any of them. A lot of them are political.
Yeah. well, ants have a social structure,
there is
a
hierarchy.
Yeah.
I guess if there was a sort of a baby voice... nest where even the queen communicated like a larva.
That'd be quite interesting in an ant colony if the queen didn't want to be seen as any different to the rest
I'm
of the ants.
I'm just one of you guys. Just think of me as Leo, but she's got this huge, big...
distended abdomen.
Yeah.
Dragging it around. She wants to go out and forage for her own food. She's just like us. The queen's been spotted going down to the supermarket.
Just think of me as one of the guys. Talk like you would normally talk. Anyway, you seen the queen today? Hot.
She is what I am into.
Yeah. Oh, me too. Oh, I wouldn't mind looking at her distended abdomen.
It's like an undercover boss type situation.
But in the ant world. All right, we got to stop, Andy. We got to stop coming up with ideas.
Thank you so much for listening to the show that we did.
Everybody, we want to say thank you to a couple of specific people. A couple episodes ago, I mentioned that when I did a gig, there was somebody in the crowd who had...
a sign saying international listener of Two in the Think Tank.
Well, we've...
a friend of theirs contacted us
called Lorne Madder. I'm so sorry, Lorne. But he is from the United Kingdom, and he was trying to convince his friend, who's from Australia, to listen to the podcast. She didn't, and she refuses to.
And we respect that.
And I respect how strongly she's holding her ground. But, you know, this is a person who's supporting the show in so many ways.
Yeah.
Physically, presently, by coming and showing up. Others by trying to force people who are so adamant that they don't want to listen to the podcast.
That's what we're looking for. Right, but then we also respect the people who won't listen.
Yeah, but we also
even more.
Yeah, that's right.
But also, we don't. I've decided, Alistair, we're not going to call them listeners anymore.
Okay,
right. We're going to call them hearers.
Hearers,
because I reckon a lot of people listen to podcasts.
That's right.
But our listeners, they really hear the podcast.
That's right. Yeah, you can't just put this on while you're going to sleep.
You absolutely can, and people have contacted us and tell us that they do.
That's right. But they're not sleeping.
We've been told they're not having a good sleep, certainly.
No.
They're not enjoying it. No, we've had people tell us that this is a great podcast to just have on in the background and tune in and out because we're always just sort of going on about something and it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely correct. Yeah. That is what this is.
That's absolutely what this is, and thank you all for listening. I think there was also we were contacted on Twitter.
Yes. Oh, we were contacted on Twitter by somebody who had inspired by a sketch from episode 135, had made...
Or seven?
135. I have it in front of me, Alistair. You're right. But thanks anyway. You were joking.
I was just joking. And also, I was just saying seven is in an unrelated way.
This is Philip Schmeichel. Great,
great
surname.
Name.
Philip Schmeichel. I hope that's your real surname because it is incredible. Who had made an alien sports analogy sketch based on something. They took it in quite a different direction. And as they say, you know, needs a little more time for production value and takes without looking at the camera. But I think they had a really funny, solid approach.
And
to
I think
this
that
sketch.
Might be the first time a listener has actually made a sketch.
Yeah, yeah.
So as we say, we are happy for people to, you know, have a crack at some of these.
And by the way, this sketch that they've made, I don't think we can claim any credit for whatsoever.
Yeah.
They really came up with their own take on the idea.
Mm.
But thank you so much for even trying to credit us.
Yeah, much appreciated. So, and then you can find us on Twitter. I'm at AlistairTB.
I'm at Stupid Old Andy.
And we're at Two in Tank.
You can find us on Facebook, although we don't really do anything on Facebook.
We probably should do more on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah. You can find us on Patreon if you would like to chip in, send us three words to get the King's Ear, or if you want to get some of our bonus episodes, which are coming out. There'll be one coming out every second Wednesday.
Mm.
That's two in the side tank and two in the sitcom tank.
Yeah.
Those are a bit of fun.
Yeah, and that's for the $8 Patreon thing.
Yes.
Also, just while we're mentioning things, I keep forgetting their name, and I apologize, but somebody is always has been continuously updating this two in the think tank wiki.
Have they?
Yeah, and they put in like...
Oh, we've got to share that again. That's amazing. Somebody is keeping our wiki up to date with the sketches that have been in every episode.
Yeah.
And that's incredible.
Yeah, and has been gone back through the back catalog and has been updating more of it and things like that. So thank you very much. I apologize that I don't remember your name right now.
Well, we'll put a link to it in the show notes.
Great.
And we will thank them in the show notes. How about that?
That's a good idea.
And we
love
you.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.